Blog Talk Radio.
Best-selling and award-winning author of true crime and crime fiction, Yvonne Mason is back with a brand new book, The Pink Canary, a book that delves into the life of a drag queen and a marvelous whodunit. You can find this and all of Yvonne's other works on Amazon.com or find Yvonne Mason on Facebook and Twitter.
You're gonna kill me.
Buy your copy of Pink Canary now.
Hello, everybody. It is Thursday night. This is Off the Chain. I'm your host, Yvonne Mason, and I'm going to tell you what. I've waited, a couple of weeks for this show tonight, so y'all just sit back, put your feet up, get your drink of choice, because we're going to educate you, we're going to teach you some things, and then maybe you'll have a better appreciation of Mother Nature and her bad temper and bipolar mood swings. But before that, I have some exciting news. Yes, that was a shameless piece of promotion. That was my book, Pink Canary, by my friend Chris Dunham that did the voiceover. It's about a drag queen who's also a private investigator who owns a drag queen club down in Key West. And a body pops up behind her club, which is not good for business. So if you like a whodunit, if you like fall down funny laughter, if you like a good comedy, go pick up that book. You can get it on Kindle. You can get it in book form. Go pick it up and read it, because I guarantee you, you will enjoy it. The drag queen and gay community gives it 5 stars straight across the board, because I had a drag queen, a very well-known drag queen, Vicki Lane, and I love her to death, help me with the book to immerse me into the culture of drag queens. And also my best friend in the world, who is gay, gave me some wonderful, and in fact, they're both in the book. My friend Peter's in the book as Penelope, the comedic act in the show, and Vicki Lane makes an appearance at the end of the book. So please go and get that book and read it. I promise you, you will love it, because it is entertaining without being slutty. So go get the book. Now, for my exciting news, all y'all know that have listened to me since the inception of this show know that I had a goal. That was to get to 15,000 listeners by the end of the year, December, because the show will be a year old in July, and I figured I'd give myself from July to December to get 15,000 listeners. Ladies and gentlemen, the show is not even a year old. It will not be a year old until July the 27th. Are y'all sitting down? Because if you're not, you need to be. This morning, I ran the numbers on Blog Talk Radio, on this show alone, just not the podcast, but this show. On this show alone, we have 6,462 listeners, just on this show. Our biggest listener base is from Down Under. Thank you, Aussie guys. Aussie boys, thank you so much. They beat the USA out 3-1 in listening to my show. I am so humbled and so appreciative. Now, when we add the podcast that I put this show up on, which it goes up on iTunes, it goes up on Spreaker, FM.com, TuneIn Radio, YouTube, Podcast, Podcast.com, SoundCloud, MixCloud, Stitcher, and Podomatic. It goes up on all of those podcasts. When you add those numbers in with the numbers just from this show, ladies and gentlemen, drum roll, please. We are at 15,009 listeners in 53-plus countries. Thank you, everyone. You are all very special to me. I am so humbled and so appreciative of my listeners and my guests and everybody that made this dream real. And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't think dreams come true, you're looking at one, you're listening to one. 15,009 listeners. We're going for 20. It's only 4,000 some odd more. We're going for 20,000. Y'all made it happen, and I appreciate it so very much. So, With that being said, I promised you that I would help you get educated about the bipolar nature of Mother Nature. And the one that's going to help us do that is a storm chaser and an urban explorer, and his name is Billy Wade. And I found out about Billy through another friend and guest of mine, Jennifer Dawn, who owns her own production company out west. She makes films, and Billy used to intern for her. Well, Billy decided that he was going to go out on his own because he has a love of storms and abandoned places. He's been chasing storms for 8 years. Now, we're not just talking about tornadoes, ladies and gentlemen. This young man just loves to chase storms, and we'll get into the why. He's chased storms all over the country, including Mississippi, Louisiana, Missouri, Alabama, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Oklahoma to Texas, and he says so many others. He is addicted to chasing storms, and we're going to find out why. So without further ado, welcome, Billy. So glad you came on this show.
Hello, yes. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's been a minute trying to get you on here. I thought for a minute I wasn't going to get you on here because I couldn't ever get your stuff from you.
Yeah, no. I get busy with the storms and I get busy with the clients and stuff like that. I got really swamped about the time I got the opportunity to do this. So I really apologize for that little bit of a wait. So I'm really glad we made it happen still, though.
Me too. Now, before we talk about Mother Nature's bipolar personality, when you were little, were you as enamored of storms as you are now? Was it something that you always wanted to do, or did it happen later in life? How did you get here?
Believe it or not, it started with the I always liked the weather, but I really didn't like it as a child. I was honestly a little bit scared because I didn't understand, you know, what the storms were doing or the storm was thinking and things like that. And then May 10th, 2008 happened, and we had an EF4 come within, I would say, a mile of my place.
Whoa.
And it was an EF4, massive rain-wrapped wedge on the ground, and it hit my cousins and things like that, and actually killed one of my cousins, and then it killed a really good family friend and things like that. And I kept thinking, I was like, that was my first storm. That was really my first tornado, actually seeing it visually for myself. And it was really the first time that I actually understood that we actually was under the warnings. There was actually such thing as, like, instability, things for the storm to get it going and stuff. And I remember hearing the day before talking about our area being under the gun for severe weather. And I was like, that'd be cool if I could see something. And I did. And that was the first time that I was like, I've got to learn how to do this. I've got to learn how to possibly forecast. And I got to learn how to get out there and kind of help the community a little bit with the eyes on the storm. And I just kept going and kept pushing and kept pushing and just kept pushing myself. And, I'm finally here now 8 years later, and I absolutely love it, and it's been one of the best experiences of my life. I'm learning so much. I'm growing, and every day I learn something new, and every day I just continue to keep striving to become a better chaser, but not just as a chaser, because I go out there and photograph the storms, so my goal is to photograph the storms. And that's very important
because
it really is, because you capture that and people can look back at that and they can see how these storms are growing and what's feeling the storms out, you know, what's making these storms, the ingredients and things like that. So
now for people that don't live in Tornado Alley, and I'll get you to explain that in a minute, but people that don't live there and experience tornadoes like I did from February to June when I lived in Georgia, there are five categories of tornadoes, ladies and gentlemen. It starts with an EF1, which is basically pissing in the wind, and then it goes up to an EF5, which is called the finger of God. Now, Billy, can you explain to our listeners the difference in those storms and what makes them those categories?
Yes, the categories actually, it was actually invented by, and it was the idea of Theodore Fujita. The Fujita scale is originally what it was. It was just the F scale, so F0, F1, F2, F3, F4, and F5. Now we've got the enhanced Fujita scale, and the EF0 is anywhere from 65 to 85 mile an hour per hour winds. Don't ever estimate those winds, though, because that's still very powerful winds. And EF1 is a 86 to 110 miles per hour. In EF2 is 111 to 135 mile an hour. EF3 is 136 to 165 miles an hour. And then an EF4 is 166 to 200 miles per hour. And then the finger of God, they call it, is the EF5, which is anything over 200 mile an hour wind. And, you know, people want to see these EF5s and things like that. They really do not want to see an EF5. The damage that they cause is like an atom bomb. It's like an atomic bomb hitting a city. It's catastrophic damage, some people call it, because it's sickening to see, because you see people's lives, people's homes, everything being leveled in its path is what an EF5 will do. And even with an EF4, same thing. It's very strong. It's a very violent tornado. Same with the EF3, it's a little bit weaker. It's 136 to 165, so you've got about a 30-mile-an-hour wind difference between that to an EF4, and that EF3 is still a very violent tornado. That's 165-mile-an-hour winds we're talking about. So that's still a violent tornado. The 111 to 135, same thing. Very, very strong winds, and that's why I tell everybody not to ever – oh, it's just an EF0, or it's just a little rope tornado. Well, that little rope can actually become an EF2, EF3. Last year near Bakers, Montana, there was an EF3, and it was just a little tornado. It was one of the strongest tornadoes Montana's seen in a long time. So things like that, people don't need to underestimate these things. And, of
that
course, Montana sees tornadoes are not seen in Montana as much, but still it's a very high rating for a tornado. So just because it's just a bird fart tornado, they call them, it can still cause a lot of damage. And they need to be taken seriously because people's lives, property, and things like that is still – I don't recommend driving. I recommend any time you get a storm that's severe, you need to take shelter. And it's a very important thing to take shelter. It's a good thing to teach your kid instead of going out there and going, oh, I'm going to watch this. No. Leave that to us. That's our job.
And what people also don't understand is even a zero will take a pine needle. I can't talk tonight, Billy. I'm sorry. A pine needle and put it through the trunk of a tree.
Yes. Those winds are so incredible in those tornadoes, and people don't realize that. Even the slightest tornado can do that. It can flip mobile homes in the EF0. So I'm not saying it will, but it can. And that's why they tell people to get out of mobile homes, is because they're very unsturdy and not safe. And it's one of the things people just need to – it don't matter if it's a weak tornado or if they're calling for a devastating or a catastrophic tornado. You need to take it all as the same – and take shelter. And because your life is at stake, your kids' life is at stake, or whoever you have, your grandkids or yourself. So.
And we were talking before the show that a tornado, because Mother Nature is what she is, a tornado can change intensity, direction, wind shear, wind speed, at the drop of a dime.
Exactly. You get on your on a lot of your large violent tornadoes, sometimes they will take that right-hand turn, and it'll basically take it. It's like a 180 is what it's doing. It's taking that turn, and it's now traveling more east. And like that, people don't understand that when they take that easterly course, it's more of a stronger tornado usually. So we've still got to always be on guard. We've got to, like, a lot of people want to see the radar images and stuff like that. But when you're out there chasing, you've got to really just look at that storm. And if that tornado turns, you can get back south, you know, get out of its path.
Yeah, because it'll come back on you in a heartbeat.
Yep, exactly. They can run you over, yes.
And that's not a pretty sight.
No, I would not want to be in that. I've had to seek shelter one time at a gas station because I thought we was going to get hit. And it was straight line winds, and it was called the rear flank downdraft. And we was getting hit by that. And luckily, the tornado crossed about a mile from us, but I really thought we was in a really bad spot. So I darted south and took shelter. And, you know, people say, oh, we don't need to. But, you know, as a chaser, we've got to obey by the safety code as well. And, you know,
yep,
speed, you know, whatever it is, because our lives are at stake, you know. So we got to take precaution as well. So
now, Billy, for people that don't, before I do that, explain to people what Tornado Alley is, because I know people have heard it all their lives. You know, Tornado Alley is under a watch. Not many people really understand what Tornado Alley is and why it's called Tornado Alley.
Well, Tornado Alley is one of them things people don't really understand, because it's a variety of different things. You got the warm air coming in from the Gulf, and it's the states ranging from Iowa, Nebraska, some of Colorado, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas. But the thing is, though, people don't realize is I call Tornado Alley anywhere because they can happen anywhere. So, and now some of the new Tornado Alley, it's got Florida in there, Alabama, Georgia, not really Georgia, just a little bit of Georgia, Louisiana, Arkansas, Missouri, even some of Wisconsin and Minnesota, even Iowa, you know, those states there. And it's because all this air moving in from the cold, all that cold air coming in from the north, and then you've got these powerful jet streams that come across the states that are actually born out west, and they're coming in giving very big troughs. And then you've got that really warm, moist air coming in from your Gulf of Mexico. And if it wasn't for the Gulf of Mexico, we wouldn't have as much severe weather, to be honest. The Gulf of Mexico plays a huge deal in our severe weather. And then, of course, you got your dry lines, which separate your dry moist air from your dry, from just your dry air. So, and then you've got your fronts, your warm fronts, and then you've got your cold fronts, and then sometimes your stationary fronts, and then your low pressure systems that help create that little bit of a spin in the atmosphere. And you get all that convergence, and wherever that stuff converges at, you get a severe weather day. Sometimes one or two tornadoes, sometimes no tornadoes, sometimes just hailers. And what I mean by hailers is big hailstones, or sometimes a wind event. So with your deeper troughs and your negative tilted troughs, you get more stronger and violent tornadoes. Now, not all the time, but most of the time, the nice deep troughs are the ones that you got to really watch. But I'm not going to say that on all of them, because it happens just sporadically at times. So,
And it depends on the temperature of the cold air coming down out of the north and then the warm, moist air going up. And ladies and gentlemen, what he's saying is when these three elements collide, it's like dropping a plate of spaghetti on the floor.
Yep, it just it explodes. You know, it goes outward and everything starts to build, and then everything starts to build even more, and then you've got your towering cues, and then you've got your storms, and then you've got a severe storm, and then you've got a supercell, and then that's when you can get your tornadoes out of your supercell, which is a supercell is a rotating thunderstorm. So,
and it becomes a domino effect, does it not, Billy? Because as those troughs travel, it picks up other air and other wind shear and other this and other that, and it's like it picks up extra baggage as it's moving south and east and north, and
it really does.
Kind
of, it adds more ingredients to the storms because you've got to have your instability, you've got to have lift, you've got to have your wind shear, which is your spin in the atmosphere, you've got to have moisture. You know, all these things are key elements of having severe weather. You may have instability, you may have wind shear, and you may have some moisture, but if you don't have the others, sometimes you don't have storms. So sometimes you get the storms without the tornadoes. And, you know, people don't understand about the tornadoes, you've got to have the perfect environment. And, you know, with the perfect environment, that's meaning all these key ingredients have to come into play. If they don't, you may just get a wind event, or, you know, you may get severe storms, or you may get even large hailers. And that sometimes includes baseballs, tennis balls, softball, softball. So.
And what I find interesting, and like I said, I'm from Georgia, so tornadoes was like a fact of life for us. It was like hurricanes down here. It's just one of the things you expect. But we always knew, and ladies and gentlemen, there's nothing more eerie than all of a sudden you've got rain that's coming in at an angle, and you've got wind that's blowing like there's no tomorrow, and then all of a sudden it gets dead quiet, dead still, no rain, no wind, and the sky turns green.
You know, what's crazy about the green is, you know, a lot of people are really worried about, like, green meaning tornadoes and things like that. Usually the green is actually signifying and showing that there's hailstones in that storm, or that the light is actually being reflected or refracted out a different way at a different angle. Certain angles on your storms will light it up a different color. So, and sometimes you get that stillness in your, there's a thing right before tornadoes, it's called a clear slot. And sometimes you get a little bit of a clearing, and it seems like there's nothing happening, and then the tornado hit. A clear slot actually indicates that the tornado is intimate or occurring. It's actually like moments before it happens, or it's actually being done. So there was a storm in Goodman, Missouri, and an actual tornado actually hitting Goodman a couple weeks ago. And it's just south of me, probably 15 minutes to my south, 10, 15 minutes to my south. One of my buddies got video of this tornado, and you can actually see it gets really bright. Really, really bright, and then here comes the tornado right behind it. So that was your clear slot. It was just phenomenal. I was like, dude, that is one of the best clear spots I've ever seen. That was phenomenal. And it really does. It lights up really nice and almost pretty, and then all of a sudden, bam, you see the debris hitting and the houses are getting hit, stuff like that. And it was like, oh, my God. Like, you could really physically...
That's a false sense of security for someone who's not used to tornadoes. Oh, the storm's over. It's bright.
Yep, exactly.
And then they go out, and the next thing you know, they're not in Kansas anymore, Toto.
Yep, they're getting hit. Or something like that. That's why I tell everybody to stay inside and seek shelter. You know, that's the main thing out of everything is seek shelter when your warnings are being issued, even severe thunderstorm warnings. Who wants to get caught in softball or baseballs or golf ball size hail traveling at 60 to 120 miles an hour? I mean, that stuff can be deadly. This year I was out chasing the storm near Pierce City, Missouri, and I had to use a keyboard to get measurements of this hailstone, and these hailstones were tennis ball-sized hailstones. So,
wow.
And I'm getting hit in the shoulder and things like that, and that stuff you got to be careful.
Did we lose you?
Nope.
Ladies,
am I still here?
Yeah, you're still there. You gotta be careful.
Yes, you gotta be careful wherever you go with these severe weather, even if it's just a severe thunderstorm. You know,
that brings up something else. You not only chase tornadoes, you chase thunderstorms.
Yes.
Why?
Storms. I like the thunderstorm because the photography opportunities are beautiful. When you can watch a storm go from a cumulus to a cumulonimbus, and then you got your thunderstorm, and then you've got the perfect supercell or a shelf cloud or something like that. The sheer beauty in storms is just outstanding. And, you know, I try my best to take all the photos I can and I try to bring that home so I can show people that the beauty is truly out there. You know, there's a verse in the Bible, actually, Psalms 19:1, and it says, "For the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky proclaims the work of his hands." And
that
you know,
is true.
And I really see the beauty in the creation that he has done. So I really love capturing that, and I want people to not be – I don't want to put fear in people about storms. I want to educate people so they can understand what goes on.
And to respect storms, because storms are – you think about it, storms are important, not just the rain – but the lightning and the thunder and everything that goes with it, that is important to us as on this earth. The lightning breaks up the electricity, the thunder clears out the humidity, and the rain is refreshing and replenishes the earth.
Yes, it really does. It replenishes us, but in large quantities, we got to watch out for the flash flooding. That's another danger. There's actually studies show that there's more people that die from flash flooding than tornadoes. So, and that's because people just drive into it. So when you hear the saying, turn around, don't drown, definitely take that advice and take that advice seriously, because I've seen so many people out there that do get swept away. I was watching people turning into these stores, and they thought they was actually pulling into their parking lot, and they were pulling into actually floodwaters, and boom, away they went. And that was a couple years ago on Tropical Storm Patricia, when she was hitting the Gulf of Mexico and coming inland. That was near Holman, Louisiana. We was watching people just getting washed away and driving off bridges and stuff like that because they couldn't see the high water. So it's a very, very serious thing people need to pay attention to. But like you said, it is very beneficial. The storms actually are very beneficial in so many ways. Like you said, for the farmers that need the water, the rain for the growth, but we need water for even our aquifers, you know, our natural aquifers. So we get our cleanest water, you know, after it filtrates through the soil and things like that. So we really need to be appreciative for what we have, but we need to actually, when it threatens, when we get the threatening skies, we need to take shelter. We need to have the safety plans in play. Have a safety plan for your family. Draw up a safety plan for your kiddos and practice with them and explain to them, don't fear this stuff, because with fear, panic, and then shock comes in. So, but take precautions and use it. When you hear there's an outlook of severe weather, definitely get a safety plan together and be like, kids, if something happens, let's go here, let's do this, and have that play.
And that is very good advice, because when I was a little girl in grammar school, one of the things that we did, and this was way back in the 50s, and we practiced it, I guess we must have practiced it once a week, and they would blow the siren in the school, and we'd all have to go out in the hallway and scrunch up against the wall with our face to the wall and put our hands over our heads, because we knew that if a storm came, or if a tornado warning came, that was the safest place.
Exactly. Having that safety plan is a lot better than, you know, getting caught in a tornado warning with no safety action or no safety at all. Because I've been in cases of, even in my hometown, you know, people, the warnings are issued, and everybody goes to the door looking for the storm. And it's like, guys, you've got to take the shelters. Even in western Kansas and stuff like that, when we're chasing out of state, you get these people that just, they just look around, and they're like, where is it? And it's like, it's too late. Just take shelter, you know. Just get, have that safety plan. Don't get the lawn chair and the beer and sit in your yard and watch it. You know, I don't recommend that at all.
No, because the beer will go one way, the chair will go another way, and you ain't in Kansas anymore.
Exactly. And, you know, not the, just the tornado. With tornadoes, you know, that's a rotating thunderstorm. So your dangers are heavy rains, the winds, the rear flank downdraft. You get the tornado itself, and then you've got large hail in these supercells. So there's many dangers that come with a tornadic supercell. So.
Now, not only do you chase storms, photograph storms, you also are a go into towns after a storm and act like a first responder, rescue, clean up. What made you decide to do that?
What got me doing the basically the search and rescue and the first respond kind of work is in the cleanup efforts is because I've watched too many people like Joplin. I was on Joplin's tornado May 22nd, 2011, and I had families' homes gone. I had friends of families' house gone. I had so many people I knew that their houses were just gone. And I really was like, I need to show some remorse and give back. You know, I've got to be able to help my communities. And my community is not just Flint or Neosho or, you know, my Southwest Missouri. My area and my fellow peers is everybody around me. So wherever I go, if we need to get in there and respond, I'm going to do it. And I'll stop the chase. Even if the tornado's actually left the town and it's still on the ground, I will stop and help somebody else. We had an incident December 21st, 2013, in southeast Arkansas, near Durmont, Arkansas, just south of there. There was a pretty violent tornado across the road, probably, I would say, 80 yards, 70 to 80 yards in front of us. It picked a semi up and threw the semi. And I get out, like, I'm yelling at my chase partner. I said, we got to stop to make sure he's okay. Chase was over at that point. We got out, and I ran to the semi-truck driver. My other chase partner's on the phone with 911, and I'm on the phone with the radio, my TV station I used to chase for, and I'm telling them that I've got to go help this guy. And I set my phone down and run over to him, and he honks the horn, and he lets me know he's okay. And, you know, thank God that he was, because I did not want to see more of Joplin. I did not want to see people's lives being ripped apart. I didn't want to see little kids, you know, crawling out of their homes, you know, and walking down the street just wondering where they are, wondering where their parents are, stuff like that. So I do this just to give back, and I do this because I would want the same thing done to me if it was my home. I would want somebody to stop for me. You know, I would want somebody to help me out if I needed it.
Especially if you weren't even there and you were out chasing and there was some family member in your home, you would want somebody to see about them because you weren't.
Exactly. Exactly. I would want somebody to be there if I was. And it's always treating others the way you want to be treated.
That is true. That is very true. Now, feel free to tell me you don't feel like talking about this subject. I meant to ask you before the show went live, but I want people to understand how dangerous your job is and that while you do it for the love of it, you also understand and respect the danger. And that is, you lost a comrade and a fellow storm chaser not too long ago, correct?
Yes. Yes, I did. I actually can't really talk much on that, though. That's a really touchy subject.
Okay.
It's still very fresh, and it's one of them things that we can't really discuss right now.
That's okay. I just want people to understand that it's not a glory job, Billy. It's not. It's something that, A, takes great courage, and it takes great determination. It takes great stamina to be able to push through, even though you've got an adrenaline rush. There is a modicum of fear because you don't know what the thing's going to do.
Yep. And that's when the adrenaline kind of helps with that. Even though we lost our friends, you know, we and other chasers, we still get out there, you know. And it, don't get me wrong, the day after they passed, I was out there again, and I knew my job and I had a duty to do, and I had to do it. And, you know, it's not easy. You know, it's never an easy job to do. But, you know, you push through and you keep chasing and you keep focused, you know, what the main objective is. You know, you're trying to help somebody else. You know, get the warnings out.
And not only
out and
that,
talk.
But would it be safe to say that what y'all do as chasers is you help the meteorologist and the people that study the storms on the back end, the scientists, the meteorologist, the all those people on the backside, y'all give them data and information and even photos that they can study and be better prepared, maybe to A, find a way to dissipate a tornado, B, figure out, because we know tornadoes change their mind like women change their mind, figure out how to warn people in enough ahead of time so that they don't get caught up like Joplin. So what y'all do is for science as well as for the love of the storm itself and doing the chasing, but you're also doing a good work.
Exactly. And, you know, it's kind of funny you mentioned that because yesterday was an anniversary of a tornado we got last year. And the National Weather Service couldn't confirm it. And we actually sent them the photo and the video, and they was actually able to confirm the tornado by the photos that we sent in. So, yeah, our studies go beyond just, you know, taking the photos for our glory, you know, for the beauty, but we also help other people with it. Get, like, on Twitter and Facebook, I can throw a Facebook out there, post and be like, guys, there's a tornado heading for this and this location, or, hey, there's a tornado on the ground, or there's a tornado warning, and I can throw the photo out there of the storm or if there's a tornado and give the direction it's going and warn those other people that are on my Facebook or my friends got friends of friends or something like that.
Uh-huh.
They can get, you know, it's like you said earlier, a domino effect on this kind of stuff. So it's getting those warnings out, getting people safe, and getting people to really respect our skies.
Because Mother Nature is a bipolar entity, ladies and gentlemen. She really is, and she is unforgiving. Now,
she really is.
on a lighter note, in your travels, we were talking before the show, in your travels, you found these abandoned places that you felt a connection to. Tell our listeners why you not only chase storms and take pictures of the storms for educational purposes, but you also take photographs of other things for the same reason.
You know, this is really one of my favorite things to talk about also with the storms, because I love abandoned places. There's absolutely something beautiful about an abandoned house in a farm or a abandoned farm out in the middle of the field. And, you know, there's a lot of things about these things that people don't understand. And, you know, you don't think about it. Most people don't ever think about it. But when you cross over an abandoned home, I look to the side and I'm just like, man, the memories, the great times, the kids that were running through the hallways, to playing in the yard, to playing in the toy swings and, you know, and stuff like that. And I started capturing these moments because our history is important. And I do it with a lot of my local history too. And I document a lot of my local history, my four states, Southeast Kansas, Southwest Missouri, Northeast Oklahoma, and Northern Arkansas. And I document these places because they tell a story just like me and you do. And,
right.
You know, I really don't understand, like, some of these people that just, they just want to get out there and see the storm, but they don't appreciate our history. And the thing with our society is the same thing. People don't understand our history, so they have to tear it down. And it's really, really sad, you know, that they really don't want to appreciate it. They tear down, and once it's gone, folks. And I get out there and I photograph, I don't know, probably, I would hate to guess it, but I probably documented probably close to 5,000 locations. And that's from abandoned farm homes to insane asylums. We was chasing storms last year in Mississippi, and then we got to Alabama and realized there was an abandoned insane asylum just up the road from where we was. So what did we do? We took a detour on the way home and photographed the insane asylum.
Wow.
And, you know, it's little bits and pieces of history that we got to remember and cherish. Yeah, these places
and I'm sure
are just,
that in, that it, I'm sure that asylum has a written history of its own. If somebody would just take the time to do the research and put the pictures with when it was built, who built it, who was there, what happened, why did they abandon it? To me, when I see something like that, I want to know more.
Yes, that's how I am. When I see an abandoned place, I was like, I want to know the history of this. And that insane asylum that we went to, and I actually, on the way there, I started looking up the history, and come to find out it was an all-black insane asylum, so it was all blacks. They were actually forced to work in the insane asylum, and they were forced to work. If they wasn't working, they were actually getting, you know, whatever kind of treatment they did to them. But I don't want to talk about that because that stuff is our past. But we still need to respect our past, even if it is a gruesome past. We need to really understand our history, and we need to soak up our history and appreciate it because we are a beautiful nation built on our history. And
think about it, Billy. Someone could be looking for family members, and maybe a family member wound up there for whatever reason, because they used to put women in insane asylums for reading books, for crying out loud, for postpartum
exactly. They
syndrome.
They thought women were witches, you know?
Yeah. Well, we are, but that's beside the point. But if, say, someone is looking for a relative, and that relative disappeared, that relative could have been in that insane asylum. So it does pay to talk about it, to write about it, because it may be the missing link to someone's history that they personally want to know about.
Exactly. And, you know, that's another thing is, like, with all these different places, farm homes, hospitals, all these abandoned facilities and buildings, and even, you know, been to quite a few different, like, theme parks. You know, I'm actually, like, my long-term goal is to do a book, you know, on my journeys. And
wow.
Along my journeys, I want to tell people about this stuff. I want to tell a really cool history. I want to call it, like, Journey Through the Plains, you know, Seen Through Billy's Eyes or something like that. And I just want people to really see this kind of stuff for really what it is. And, you know, too many people will just turn the other cheek and just ignore that decaying building. But I to all the listeners out there, I just want you guys to take a minute, step back, these buildings. Don't go in them, but just look at them and just close your eyes and just imagine the families. Imagine the people that walk through the hallways. Imagine the people that really, you know, we're fond of these places. Just absorb that for a little bit. It's really a heart-wrenching, and it's just a beautiful feeling, too. Because I've been to places, I was in a place in Kansas last year that was phenomenally untouched, and the only things really left in the home was everything of their possessions. And I mean everything. There was money, there was everything left behind. The urns, their ashes was still in the home. And
it makes one wonder what happened to the people that lived there. Did they have to leave in a hurry?
Yeah.
What happened? Were they in a car wreck that killed them? Why was that home never cleaned out?
Exactly. And that's another thing that keeps me going, you know, and keeps me wanting to photograph these places, because they are beautiful. Beautiful, magnificent places. And then sometimes you get an abandoned theater. I was in Southern Illinois not too long ago, and we went through a ghost town and found an abandoned theater. Oh my goodness. Oh, this thing was spectacular. And you could I just closed my eyes and I could see all the people sitting down and enjoying the show. And, you know, it's these little moments like that just take my breath away. It's the same with the storms. You know, it's another thing with the storms when they're actually coming across these buildings. They
uh-huh.
actually they look really good as composition to add to the shot. So you get really good photos with those abandoned places, but you also get the piece of history that nobody else gets to see. So.
And what people don't understand is once that building is gone, you can't bring it back.
Exactly. Once it's gone, it's gone. And if it's there, document it. If you have to document it from the road or the ditch line, that's perfectly fine. I recommend people just to stop at these places and take photos of them. But do not go inside. I don't recommend doing that because it's a very big safety hazard. from asbestos to all that stuff. Leave that stuff to me and leave that stuff to us herbaxers. That's a very dangerous thing to do. I've actually been in a place for so long that I was coughing up. You could literally see the asbestos I was coughing up. You could see the dust I was coughing up. Also, the falling risk. I fell through a second-story building, fell all the way to the basement, and really hurt my lower back. So these places are very dangerous, too. So I don't recommend doing that. But if you were to step on the side of the road and stop in the road and take a shot, I recommend doing something like that. But
and document it. Don't just take the shot. Document the where it was, what time of day, the city, the town, the year.
Yes. Document it, you know, to the fullest. Just stay out of the buildings because they're nuts. they get really, if you ever, like, Western Kansas, I'll have to tell you about Western Kansas because it was one of my favorite little houses. I found a little old house, farm home, had some beautiful flowers and got down low and was able to shoot the flowers and the building itself, the house. And what I did, Steve, was Kim was the cattle guard. And I stepped in a cattle guard, and I dislocated my my tailbone. Oh, my goodness. You know, I fell all the way through that thing, and I was limping for the rest of the day. And I had to chase storms. Like, about an hour later, we had storms. So.
Now, when you're out like that, and you're not chasing storm, but then a storm comes up, how do you get notified? Do you get a phone call? Does it come across your computer? Is it a two-way radio? How do the people that you work for let you know that storm's coming?
I got radars on my phone. I've got radars on my computer, and I've got alerts that comes through my phone that lets me know if there's, like, a severe storm or my radar. I always keep my eyes on the radar when I'm out there chasing because it shows the development and stuff like that. So,
now, you told me before the show, and I think you told me before the show, like I said, this time of night I go brain stupid sometimes, that you're either leaving later tonight or in the morning to go to Texas, right?
Yeah, it looks to be southwest Oklahoma to northern Texas along the Red River. And it looks like a potential of some isolated supercells along a dry line down there, and we're going to get down there and actually play some storms tomorrow, and we're really looking at things, and we are going no matter what, so I'm really excited about that, but it depends
when,
if we leave tonight or in the morning.
When you go storm chasing like that, do you stay in that area until there's an all clear, or do you leave as soon as you get through chasing that sail and go back to home, or do you go to another place? How do you manage your time?
We would chase those storms till we see the potential starting to basically stabilize and get not as severe. We'll stay down there till the very last minute. If the tornado potential and the storms look really significant and they're going to last for several hours, we'll stay 3 or 4 hours chasing these things as far as we need to. I got back from a chase the 25th just 2 days ago in southeast Kansas, and we was able to follow that stuff all the way home. And then we had to drop south just a little bit of there was a tornado warning coming out of Oklahoma. And it hit the Missouri line and went severe. And we had gusty winds up to 60 mile an hour. And so we can follow it all the way home, or we can, once it starts kind of weakening off, we'll get in front of it and shoot some lightning, do some stuff like that. And then if the lightning's not doing good, if the storm's just collapsing and they're just being not storms, we're going to go like, what do you guys want to do? Do you want to reassess? Do we need to follow it a little longer, or do we head home? So, and then we decide to head home. You know, usually if the storms are weakened and stuff like that, we'll head home. So,
but it would be safe to say you carry an overnight bag just in case.
Yes, and we usually sleep in the vehicle 99% of the time. So,
well, that makes sense because you don't want to be too far away from your gear in case a storm starts again.
Yes, because, you know, sometimes they go out. It's kind of like which day was. There was a day last year. No, it was 2 years ago. I went out for a week. It looked really good for a week. So we got supercells every day we went out. So sometimes we stay out for 2 days. Sometimes we stay out for a day. And we just pack accordingly what's going to happen. So we're just going out for tomorrow. I may come home because my fiance has to come back for work on Saturday. So we'll chase Friday evening, and then come home, go sleep, and I may load up in the morning of Saturday and head out again. So it just depends.
On where the storm is, where it's going, and how it's going.
Yep, exactly. You know, we got a forecast. We look at the models. We look at data. We look at different things, and we plan accordingly what we need to look at. So.
All right, and the... Believe it or not, we're running out of time. But before we run out of time, I want to do two things. One, would you explain to the listening audience or anyone that is interested in becoming a storm chaser what they need to do to become educated before they even get in a vehicle to go chase a storm? Do they need special schooling? Do they need to be with someone experienced? Because you just don't want to get out in the car and go chase a storm. That would be kind of foolish. What
exactly.
Does someone need
I,
to do?
I honestly don't want anybody to get out there. And if you do want to learn, I recommend taking a basic spotter class within your counties. The National Weather Service gives you spotter classes. And I highly recommend getting a spotter class. And even the intermediate, if they offer a more advanced class. And I recommend people getting out there and taking those classes because they explain things in a way that you can understand in layman's terms, and they show you what to look for and things like that. And I recommend them doing that because that's where you're going to get an understanding. And I honestly, if those ain't enough, I recommend going on Google and searching out how to make thunderstorms or how thunderstorms are made, you know, and how supercells are formed. I recommend doing loads and loads and loads and loads of research before you just load up and go. It took me 2 years before I got out on the plains when I started chasing. So I stayed very local within a Joplin, like about a 30 to 40 mile radius of my area. So,
and did you go out with someone who is experienced? You didn't go out by, I mean, that would be like going out and teaching yourself to drive a car and not even know how to turn on the key.
Yes, exactly. I did ride along, and I ride along with more and more every year because I learned from these people that's been doing it for 20, 25 years, so, or even 15 years. And that's the thing with the severe weather is people don't understand. We learn all the time. I learn something new every day. Every storm is something else. So, you know, like the other day, the 25th, we was out in southeast Kansas. We was expecting isolated supercells, and the storm didn't do what we thought. So we got really nice structure out of them and got some gorgeous images out of them. So, you know, learning your setups and learning what to look for and learning what the jet stream does, learning what those cold fronts can do, learning what the warm fronts can do, learning what the dry line can do, you know, get a grasp on your understanding. And that's my best answer for the people that want to learn how to do this. Definitely don't do this if you have no experience. I recommend do not do it because you will get yourself killed or somebody else. So, and that's not
now,
worth it. You know, life is precious.
If someone wanted to find you on Facebook so they could follow you, because I guarantee you're going to have a whole lot of hits, where would they go to friend you on Facebook?
They can look under Billy Wade. That's actually my personal page. And then I've got the Missouri Redneck Storm Chasers, and that's why I actually post a lot of my storm chasing. And then if you want to look at my abandoned stuff, it's called the Ingressors. And that's where I post all my abandoned stuff. It's from all the abandoned houses to insane asylums to everything abandoned that I've documented. And then finally, just my photography page, the models, weddings, things like that I photograph. It's Billy Wade Photography, Can't miss it. You'll see me. I'm photographing people in my photo, and then the Ingressors has a big eye, and then it has Ingressors underneath it. And then the Missouri Redneck Storm Chasers, it's a picture of me out there with some lightning. So, and then my personal account is Billy Wade, and you can see me and my fiance. Only thing with that is, if you do go like me or something like that, I am getting to the max of my friends request. You can actually hit the follow button, and you'll be able to see everything I do. So,
there you are, ladies and gentlemen. I told you it would be a night of education and learning and very sound advice, because even a small thunderstorm, even rain without hearing thunder and lightning can be dangerous, because lightning can be 3 miles away and strike someone.
It can be up to 25 miles at times.
And strike you as you stand outside. So when it starts raining, take your happy butts in the house. Now, y'all all know that, and believe it or not, Billy, we're almost to the end of our show. Don't hang up after the show goes dark, though, because I've got some things to tell you. But, ladies and gentlemen, you have listened to Billy for an hour, and you can hear the passion in his voice. You can hear the excitement in his voice. You can hear the advice in his voice. This man is following his dream, and he didn't let anyone stop him, because he does it because he enjoys it. He does it to preserve history. He does it to help scientists and meteorologists study the weather patterns and the weather so they can give us better information and maybe even learn how to dissipate tornadoes before they become the finger of God. So the whole point of this is, if you have a dream, ladies and gentlemen, if your child has a dream, if your spouse has a dream, if your brother, your sister, your aunt, your uncle, your friend, I don't care, do not inhibit that dream. Do not allow someone else to steal that dream. And do not ask permission to fulfill that dream, because if you want to achieve greatness, stop asking permission. What you have to do is make it happen. You educate yourself. You form a plan. You find somebody with experience to help you. Because those of us that have been around the block in our craft know things. It's like I teach my children, don't fall in the same trap I did. Let me help you from my experience. So make your dreams happen. Trust me, you can. It's possible. I have a motto. The impossible I can do right now. The improbable takes me a little bit longer. Because in my mind, if I want to do it bad enough, I find a way.
Yep.
And Billy found a way. You can find a way. So if you have a dream, get your happy butt out and make it happen. Because you don't want to be that person at the end of your days and someone says, do you have any regrets? And you go, oh, I should have done this. I should have done that. No. You get out there and you do it. Because I'm going to tell you, when people come to your funeral and they're saying words over you, they're not going to remember you for your failed dreams. They're not going to say, oh, well, John Doe there, he wanted to be a rodeo rider. He never would go out and do it. No. What they're going to say is, that boy John Doe, I'm going to tell you what, he got on that bull and he rode 8 seconds. So that's what you want to do, ladies and gentlemen. You want to leave a piece of yourself behind. I will be off this weekend because I have to go shoot a wedding. I will be back on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, right here on Off the Chain. So join us. I don't have my guest list in front of me because it's that time of night, so it'll be a surprise. I'll put it up on Monday, and we'll start advertising. But just know this, ladies and gentlemen, we will make 20,000 listeners. before the end of the year. So with that, I say this is Off the Chain. I'm your host, Yvonne Mason, and until next Wednesday night, I say good evening. Billy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, you are quite welcome. And what's going to happen now, darling, is when we get off from here, the show will archive. And when it goes up into archives, I'm going to send you I'm going to put the link on my page, and I'm going to tag you in it. And I want you to repost it everywhere, on all of your pages, all of your network, have your network repost it so this can get out there because it's full of information. And then on tomorrow, if I don't do it tomorrow, I'll do it before the end of the day Sunday, because like I said, we're going out of town tomorrow. But I will upload the podcast to Spreaker, SoundCloud, MixCloud, Podomatic, Podcast.com, and Podcast Garden. And when I upload to all of those, I will put the link on my page and tag you in it. Use those podcasts everywhere. And have your friends repost them, because the different podcasts get different listening audiences. We get Australia, New Zealand, the USA, and Canada on this one. On the other podcast, we get places as far away as India and Italy and the Republic of the Congo and the Russian Federation and places I never heard of. So you want
That's
to share
awesome.
This. It is, because there's weather all over the world, and even if it's not tornadoes, people can learn from what you talk about of the storm cells.
Yep, exactly.
So
that's what I'm really about too, is when I get out there, I want people to understand, you know, not fear. You know, I want people to understand it.
Well, I'm going to get all of this over to you, and thank you again. I can't wait for you to come back. I'd like for you to come back towards September, October, if you will, and catch us up on what you've been doing.
I can do that. Yep,
okay.
I can do that. That's not a problem.
All right, I'm going to put a note to bring you back, because you are so interesting, and you've taught me a lot.
I really just love it. I really do. It's just something in... Yeah, I really liked what you said at the end, because I get made fun of all the time. Like, I got so many haters. I got a Facebook page right now. It's people making fun of me. They're using my name and taking other people's images and photoshopping me on them and stuff like that. And
why?
It's really, really sad. It's just, you know, people that try to get in the way, you know, they're just jealous.
Haters gonna hate.
Exactly.
And what it is,
you know, they
don't have the courage to do what you do.
And you actually, you know, what's ironic is it's actually other chasers. They get very dumb.
Sounds like they're territorial, like a bunch of children. Well,
yeah, they are. They don't like people getting in the way and stuff like that. So.
Well, that's okay. You got on a radio show that's heard all over the world with over 15,000 plus listeners. Plus, you were interviewed by a very good friend of mine. So you're on your way up, my friend.
Oh, yeah, and I just keep climbing. You know, I keep focused, and, you know, I really keep my P's and Q's, I guess you would say. So.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm going to say I'll bring you back towards September, October, and you be careful out there, be safe, and keep posting away, and keep doing what you do, because you do a good work.
Hey, I appreciate it, and thank you once again for the opportunity.
You're welcome, sweetheart, and we'll talk again.
All right, I'll talk to you soon. By the way, I'll actually make sure I do a better logo or a better bio about myself. Sorry that one was so short.
That's okay. You'll fix it next time. We'll add more to it.
Sounds good. I'll send you some more. So.
All right, sweetheart. Talk to you later.
All right. Hey, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Good night.
Night.